All right, it is that time for your weekly dose and our weekly dose of common sense. That is commonsenseohioshow.com for you that are following it and want to shoot us a question there. Or if you got a topic you want us to cover, you can leave it in the comments. Today is December 10, 2025. It feels like just last week we were in January of 2025. At any rate, we have our sponsor here, Glenn Harper from Harper Plus Accounting. Troy filling in, or at least appearing again today as a guest, for good reason we'll get to. He's not just a warm body over there.
Pretty face?
He's not just a pretty face. Okay. I would never say that. Because he's not just a pretty face.
Things got awkward.
Anyway, Harper Plus Accounting, our sponsor, our accountant, could be yours, Glenn Harper. Thanks for the sponsorship, by the way.
Well, thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, indeed. So it is, there's a couple of things I want to cover today, and there's a reason Troy's here. Troy, you're a law student.
Yep.
But you got a second life.
Yeah, I decided to start a business right before law school. Wanted to do the stereotypical white male in his 20s and start a power washing business. And it started blowing up. And unfortunately, I got into law school as it blew up. So now I'm trying to juggle the two.
So you not only are a full-time law student, you work for me as a lawyer, as a law clerk, as a law student upstairs in my law practice full-time.
Yes.
You run as full-time as it can be a pressure washing business.
Yep.
On the side.
Yeah.
Now that's incredible. And you know, it's not, folks, if this is, I hear pressure washing my business, sometimes I sort of roll my eyes because what I do is I defend people charged with crimes and they sometimes have to find ways to make it look like they have income. But that's not you. You have an actually legitimate business with employees and equipment, a truck. I've seen it.
Yeah.
And you have advertising, the whole nine yards, an LLC.
Yep.
And, you know, this is the year end, meaning we are trying to figure out, the business folks of the world are trying to figure out, all right, where did I screw up this year in my taxes? What do I have to do to fix it? And how much am I going to owe next year? And for that, we have our friend, Glenn Harper, accountant.
Wow. Well, first of all, what's your therapist say about all this stuff that you're doing? Got too much on your plate?
I haven't had an opportunity to speak with one yet, but I'll work on it.
Never.
Therapy is work. Yeah, is therapy.
You have the bug, and the bug says that idle hands are not going to serve anybody, so you might as well do something productive. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do something, you can work for somebody, which you're doing. Or you could have your own business, which you're doing, or you could educate yourself and do all three. Why not? This is America.
Yeah.
So look, a guy like Troy comes to you and says, look, I'm going to go be a pressure washer. What say you to that?
Well, the first thing you got to say is like, is this really what you want to do? And the reason why we say that is because whenever you go into business, whatever that is, laying concrete, brickwork, roofing, pressure washing, accounting, legal, doing anything, like whatever that service is, whatever that business is, you're going to be running a business and you're going to be probably self-employed where you're an owner operator. So if you're going to put the effort to go do something, you better be darn well sure that you like what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Right. And if you don't like what it is that you're going to do, try to pick something that you like. Of course, there's this whole thing about what can you make money at too, is a challenge as a man.
Right. You got to find both.
Yeah. You got to find both. So if you're good at something, you like it and you want to go do it, that's your first choice. Like if you hate getting up every morning and schlepping concrete, you probably should not be in concrete. But if you love it, you should be doing it. So that's the first step. So once you make that decision that you obviously like it and you're good at it, would you do a lot of it screwing around as a kid or something?
No, I watched a YouTube video one time and then I tried pressuring.
See?
I tried pressuring the company I was working for. I was like, hey, we should pick up the service. The profit margins are really good. It's kind of satisfying when you see on YouTube the videos of concrete washing. Yeah. However, if you're planning in the power washing, about 5% of your income will be from concrete that you think is satisfying. House washing and soft washing is the best way, and it's not satisfying. It's super painful. It's terrible. But that's how you make all the money. And so that's what you need to do, unfortunately.
There you go. You start off one thing. So great. So now once you start off, the first thing you have to decide is like, how hard do I want to work on this thing? Do I want to go all in? Do I just want to kind of play around? But either way, you have a decision to make at the very beginning is, am I going to do this the right way? Or am I just going to play around and do it under the table and not report anything and not take deductions and just kind of like see what happens? Once you make that decision to kind of see what happens, it's really, really, really hard to get back on the straight and narrow. But once you make the decision, well, I'm going to track my money, whatever I bill out, I'm going to collect it and track it. You can track all your expenses and do all the things. At that point, you have set your standard that I'm going to be the best at this and do it the right way. And when you do that, what do we get to do? We get to measure what's happening. We get to see what's going to happen. We get to predict what's going to happen. And then we can then, You can have strategies that will help you not pay as much tax or shelter that income as much as possible that law will let you do. So the first thing is to figure out what is, are you going to do it right or wrong? And if you decide to do it right, which is nice, a lot of people don't and they try to come back from it. But by then it's just too far gone. So we're going to assume you did it right. And then at that point, you want to set up a company. Generally, you don't want to use your social security number. People pay you a 1099 probably. You use a social security number. Your social security number is out there for everybody. Mm-hmm. So you generally set up an LLC in Ohio. It's like $99 to set one up. And then you go get your EIN number, an employer identification number from the IRS. And they basically say that your entity, this new pressure washer company you started, is going to be known as this pressure washer company LLC with an EIN number. And that's how you're known to everybody out there. It's not Troy. It's your company. What's the name of your company?
Drip, Drop, and Wash LLC.
Drip, Drop, and Wash.
Drip, Drop, and Wash. You heard it right now, here. See, that's serving Central about. Ohio since?
This would be, I think, 5 years now. So what is this? 2021?
Yeah. So 5 years. So what's the, there's a tipping point, right? Where businesses fail within X number of years.
Usually it's within 18 months, something like 75% of the businesses fail because for many reasons. The biggest reason is they don't properly pay their employees properly. They call them subcontractors with their employees and they don't withhold the taxes right. And it catches up and it blows up. The second thing is they're maybe charging some sort of sales tax or fiduciary tax and they just forget to charge it or they charge it, but don't remit it. And the big one is, oh, I made $50,000. I have $50,000. They don't realize that they really owe half of that to the government, the $25,000. So when it comes time for taxes, they don't have it. They're done. Or business takes a drop. So those are the big ones. Or, you know, you're trying to wash only skyscrapers over 50 stories, and there's none of those in this town. That would be hard, right?
Yeah. So you just a bad model.
Got a bad business model. And what'll happen then in the course of the 18 months, if none of those things happen, it'll fail either A, you went in too deep with a customer that owed you a lot of money. You kept going and never paid you. You didn't pay your vendors and you went in too deep with them and they owe you and you can't get out of it. And the big one that happens is that you, in your head, you're saying, oh, I'm going to charge, I'm making up a number, $100 for the service. And you're like, oh man, I'm making $90 on that. And that's what you think. But when you actually do your accounting, do your books, you're actually lost $20. So it takes a while for this to catch up. And in that time period, that's when it happens where you're like,
yeah, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Right. And you don't even realize it because you're like, I got this job for $100. I'm making, you're really not. So The measuring and accounting for is really the biggest thing because if you do that as you go and be current with it, you can see if you are hitting the number that you think you are because on the next bid, think you're making $90 and you're only losing 10. The next one you better go, I better charge $200 for this. Mm-hmm. Then you get to measure. And that's probably what you did. And most people learn by the school of hard knocks, but that's half the fun, right?
Well, how else can you learn?
There is no other way because it's when you first start, again, it's really hard. You got to go buy this equipment. You got to do your marketing. You got to take time off. You got to go do the work. Things break and you don't have enough money to go hire a professional to say, hey, set up my LLC. Write my contracts for my customers. Oh, set up my accounting software and teach me what I can write off. Like nobody has that kind of money to do that. But that's the best money you can spend because if you spend that at the beginning, you'll make that back 1,000 times down the road. But that's just the hard part.
You're mentioning something about starting off kind of rough or like wrong way or illegal way, which however we want to say. In my area, power washing, landscaping, all that, it's a very common way to start. You just don't actually start an LLC and all that. You can't do that on the legal end. Correct? Because you have to have...
No, you can absolutely do that.
Oh. I think you need like a trust and everything or like...
I don't know. On the law firm side, I can just hang out a shingle and say, I'm a lawyer. And people come write me a check. I record it as income. It's not the best economically to do it or from an accounting standpoint, but I can do it. I can be a sole proprietor as a lawyer.
I didn't know it could work that way.
Yep,
I
just, absolutely.
This area was like the only greasy. So I'll say greasy. It's not greasy. A lot of people do start out that way because they don't know they want to do it forever. Like I just want to do, I want to do X amount of lawns a week.
And that's it's just a complicating mess. LLC, schmellc. I don't need that. Mm-hmm. I'll just go, look, that guy's going to pay me $500. I'm going to cut his grass.
Yeah.
Well, things always go really, really well. Or they don't go well at all. And people are always like, well, let me test it first before I do it right. Mm-hmm. And you could be a sole proprietor and use your social security number. There's nothing wrong with that. You can get an EI number as a sole proprietor. You don't have to be an LLC. It's just if you're in a position where you're trying to protect yourself from liability, a an LLC or a corporation is a great
way. And it's so easy to get one anymore, right?
Yeah, but it's just the, when you start off, again, if you're pretending you're not in law school, like, I don't know what that means to be an LLC. What is an LLC? What does that mean? Where do I go for that? That's going to be real expensive. Like, nobody knows what that means, right?
Yeah.
Just the education isn't there.
The confusion or like the blank spot out there, you don't know how to do it, just becomes an impediment that you don't even want to deal with. You don't.
It seems like in high school, like as a freshman, there should be a class that says, hey, if you ever want to become a business owner, these are the 20 things you need to do and look at, and just start that process of educating the students instead of teaching them how you go get a job. But that would be helpful. And then you're at least curious, and then you can go explore on your own and figure it out.
Yeah.
It's almost like somebody who's an accountant should create a video series on what to do if you want to start a business. And then take somebody like Troy and say, look, you want to start a pressure washing business? Here's what you do.
We actually have that.
Well, tell us.
Yeah. And again, the key is again, most people either hey, I just need to make a little money for a short term. I just want to go in and get this done. Or, hey, I just see this one project. I might as well do it. It's hard if you've never been self-employed before to think of it, that this could be a thriving enterprise, right? And in that thing, you're going to say, well, I'm the only one that's ever going to do pressure washing. I'm the only guy. It's no big deal. Then pretty soon you got two jobs at the same time. And you're like, ah, dang it. I better hire somebody. Now, what do I do for that? Well, I'll just pay them as a subcontract. And then it starts growing. And then you really get behind, and then it's really, you have some problems.
Yeah, now this is a big deal. Now you enter into my world of the IRS gets involved, mm-hmm. and maybe even the criminal department of the IRS gets involved, because you've paid all your employees for so long, cash under the table as 10. You say, well, no, I'm doing it perfectly legit. Here's a 1099. Yeah, except you tell them where to be, when to be there, how to do it. They're using your equipment. You're in total control of their entire schedule and everything they do. They're a W-2 employee, but you're treating them like a 1099. What's the cost difference?
Well, it is an interesting thing, because it's not what you say it is. I'm 6'5", 260. I'm a svelte guy, right? Just because I say that doesn't mean it's true. Just because I say I want to make you a 1099, you say I want to be a 1099, doesn't mean that's what our relationship is. So there's a lot of tests you have to go through. And what ends up happening, I like round numbers. If I were to pay you as $100 as an employee, okay, that costs me $100, plus I got to pay another give or take, say, 7.65%. So it's going to cost me like $107 to pay you for that project, mm-hmm. as an employee. So if I were to pay you as a subcontractor, then theoretically you're going to have to pay that extra tax that I would. So then I would probably have to pay you more like $108. So I'm even. My cost as an employee or a subcontractor is the same. But now you have to pay all your self-employment taxes, which is 15%. Mm. Plus, you got to pay, withhold your federal, state, and city. You got to pay all those things. Or if I'm your employer, I cover all that. And it costs me, say, somewhere around that $107 to do that.
So you're really not doing you think you're doing employees a favor because they're just getting cash. But on the other hand, they're not doing stuff that they should have to do most of the time.
Right. So that's just straight up if everybody's reporting it. Now, if I'm paying you in cash, I'm saying to myself, well, you're not paying it as income. I'm not doing it as income. So instead of me paying you $100, you got to claim as income. I'm only going to give you $50, and you're just as happy because you would have got to get $100 and pay the tax. I'd withhold it, and you're left with $50. I just give you $50. So now we've kind of cheated each other a little bit. We cheated the system, and so when the IRS comes in and sees that,
from where you call me and you get this message or some target letter from the U.S. Attorney's Office, and you get accused of a conspiracy. You're like, conspiracy?
What?
That's for drug dealers and mobsters. I'm like, no, you have an agreement with Troy here to violate the tax laws.
Because what will happen inevitably, when you pay somebody, and let's say you wrote a check, or what do the kids do these days? Venmo or something?
Venmo, Cash App.
Let's say that.
What's the method?
Venmo is most popular. Okay. Zelle is really coming up. Come along. Great.
So I'm just Zelling you money. And we just agree that's the case. But it comes time at the end of the year that we're supposed to send you a 1099, meaning I'm the employer and you're the subcontractor. And I'm supposed to send you a 1099. So I'm like, hey, Troy, I need your social security number, your name and address, so I can send you a 1099, because I got to send it to the IRS to tell them that I paid you this. The IRS puts it in a file. I send the 1099 to you. When you file your tax return, it goes in, and the IRS is waiting for your tax return to match up to that 1099. And if it doesn't match up, ping, there's going to be a letter written somewhere. Okay, so that's the first way how they're going to catch that. And you might be thinking, well, nobody's going to see because it's through Zelle or but it's going to be found. So then the second thing that happens, so that's one way how it gets tracked out. But if I don't send the 1099, I as a taxpayer, I have to sign on my tax return. Did I pay anybody as an independent contractor? Yes or no? If I say yes, did I send you a 1099? Yes or no? Well, if I paid you as a 1099, but I didn't send you one, I get penalized for that. And then I lie. If I say I didn't pay anybody as a 1099, but I did, and I didn't file it, now I just lied on my tax return because I said I did something that I really did. So they get you, right? So then let's say all that happens and you're good. We've bid 1099s, we send it off, everybody's doing everything right. The city, the state unemployment, a workers' comp, and the feds always kind of have to look at all the employers and they glean the database and they try to say, oh, you paid some 1099s. Let's see if those are legit. So how they get you then is, so the workers' comp comes in and looks at your books and said, okay, you paid these five people $10,000. Where's your subcontractor agreements? Show me how you're paying them. What does this look like? And you're like, I just give them Zelle. Like, you know, they're subcontractors. Mm-hmm. You say it 500 times. They're subcontractors. Like, show me the agreement to prove that they're a subcontractor. You don't have it. Now what they do is they go in and they reclassify that as wages. And then you have to go and file. You as, well, me, I guess the employer, like that would be me in this case. I have to then go and reclassify all those as wages. Then I got to pay all the payroll taxes, even though you already paid your payroll taxes, assuming you filed your tax return, which the IRS doesn't care what you did, they like me. So I have to go back and I have to file for every quarter. I have to say, oh, I paid you $10,000 a quarter. I got to go come up with, say, the $2,500 in tax on each of those quarters. I'm going to get charged penalties, tax, and interest, or penalties and interest for not filing for the tax that wasn't paid. Then I'm going to get charged a penalty for not filing the form. So if they catch me and I do this, they look at year 2024, but I didn't there. As soon as I grabbed 24, they look at the year before and the year after. So now they got me for 3 years. So now for 3 years, that's four quarters times 3 years. I'm dead in
times
the water.
Each number of employees.
Each one. And then there's the penalty for not filing the form, which is the really big deal. And this is a fiduciary tax. It's employee tax. You never can get out of it. Like you could, your income tax, you don't pay it in 10 years. It just goes away. But this tax follows you forever. Mm. So that's how they get you there. And then the final way that happens is
your income tax doesn't follow you.
So if you file your tax return and you don't pay, IRS has 10 years from the date you filed to collect it. So they're going to try to put a lien on you. They're going to try to levy you. They're going to try to make you pay it. If they can't get the money from you after 10 years.
Even though they're trying,
doesn't matter. It just goes away. But if
I got 10 years.
But if you've never filed, the 10 years doesn't start.
This is what we always tell people. Look, file the darn paperwork.
Correct.
File the paperwork. Just do it. Even if you can't pay it, file it. We don't have debtor's prison.
No. And then the third thing that happens. Back to this one. So once workers' comp looks at this, they then call up Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. They call up the City of Columbus. They then forward it to the Social Security Administration at the IRS.
So it's like gnashing of teeth, horribleness,
25
awful
years ago,
stuff.
The agencies didn't share the data. Now they just hit a button, they get the report. So now you got four agencies coming at you. So that's just no fun.
And you're broke and your kids don't have Christmas and life is over and your wife's going to leave you.
You don't get your bonus.
And your dog's going to die.
That's it.
Not the dog.
The dog.
Because you can't feed him.
But the final thing that happens more often than not is I'm the employer. You're my subcontractor. Troy, you're awesome. We're getting along great. This is good. Hey, here's your $5,000. Here's your $1,000 for paying you along. All of a sudden you get pissed off. I was supposed to pay you $2,000 and I only paid you $1,000. You're like, this is BS. I'm not doing it. So what do? As any self-respecting employee does in this country, when you lose your job, you go file for unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And you go call up the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services and you're like, hey, I've been working for this company and I want to get my unemployment benefits. They're like, well, we don't show them as you being an employee. Well, I've been working there. This is what I've been getting paid. And then Ohio Department of Job and Family just come to me and say, what's the story here? And I'm like, I'm nailed. So if somebody's going to rat you out, it's going to be that's going to find out by the government. It's going to be found out by just the bad relationship with your subcontractor. So if you can just eliminate that and do all the right things for you to be a subcontractor, you don't care. Or you just make an employee and you don't care.
Do it right.
Do it right.
All right. So let's change directions here for a second. It's year end.
Yep.
I'm waiting on my call from your team where we're going to figure out what the heck is going on. What do you tell a guy like Troy, tell a guy like, or say Troy calls you and says, look, it's the year end. Can you help me?
So there's two parts to that, right? So the first part is if you are working with, you should be working with your tax professional all year, because all year they're ticking and tacking and monitoring where this is going to go and making the adjustments. So there is no surprise. Okay. If you're one of the people that show up at, you know, the last of the year or on April 12th or whatever the next year, there's just not much you can do. You're just like, okay, I guess we got to account for it and you're going to pay some tax. There's not a lot of planning that can happen. It's more reactive versus being proactive. So ideally, the sooner in the year that you start that conversation and plotting things out, when you get close to the end of the year, like, hey, you know, Troy, your company's making bank. What do you want to do here? Do you need to buy any equipment that we can shelter some of this income? You want to buy a new truck? You need to buy some new pressure washers? What do you want to invest in your back in your company? The government will let you write that off so you don't pay as much tax. You can buy it now, because if you're going to buy it in January, we might as well buy it now in this year so we can write it off this year. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the biggest one. Is there any other things that you have as expenses that you didn't think about that we can put in? Is there any way we can have, like, you can pay all the bills up that you owe everybody on your vendors and those types of things? Is there any type of retirement thing you can do? I mean, can you put some money aside and sock it away? So those are the different things. And perhaps maybe you made enough money that you're probably not in the best taxable entity structure where you're paying the most amount of tax. If you were to change the structure and do something different, you could leverage a tax code to pay less tax. It's really hard to do that stuff on tax deadline day. And it's really hard to do it at the end of the year because we don't know what's happened. You don't know what happened if you don't have your books in order. So anybody out there that's doing that, it's really hard for somebody to be proactive with you if you, they don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
All right. So we got your year-end accounting done. I mean, look, this happens to me every single year. I talk to your guys or you, and they say, look, yeah, everything looks great. Thank you. And maybe you tell me, yeah, you might be getting back some money or you might owe just a few dollars, but it's never something that's outrageous. Mm-hmm. And that's only because we did the planning.
Correct.
That's it. That's it. All right. We're going to lay that one to bed. Now I want to talk about the big, beautiful bill. What's going on? What do we need to look out for? Because I hear that there's some changes in there that that may throw people for a loop with respect to donations or other things that are changing the landscape of what we're used to going forward.
Correct.
So this is the Fed. Now we're shifting gears. We're talking politically a little bit.
But, well, so again, the big, beautiful bill, the primary thing was to continue on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that Trump put in back in 2017 to extend the qualified biggest business income deduction, wanted to raise the standard deduction a little bit more to help people that are getting income, wanted to lock in, make those tax rates permanent. The rates did were scheduled to go back to the Obama tax rates, but now they made these permanent because the TCJ was a temporary bill. It was only just to be for those, that's whatever, 8 years, 7 years. Now it's now permanent. It also restored back the 100% depreciation, bonus depreciation on assets that you bought, where it was in this year was scheduled to be only 40%. So that's a pretty good deal. So if you go buy a big old hunkin' $100,000 pressure washer, before you could only write up $40,000 of it for the year. Now you could.
Now, could you do $40,000 a year until it's the whole value?
Right.
Is there?
It's just the initial year. Now you could do Section 179. There's a different ways to get there, but the bonus is really, really nice. It was just like an automatic type thing. You didn't have to qualify and do all these things. That was the big thing. Then what they did is they have things that are happening in 2025, and then there's things that are scheduled to happen in 2026, like tax on overtime. You don't have to pay that. Well,
what does that mean?
Well, it just means if you're in a certain industry making a certain amount of money and some of the money that you get paid is overtime, you may not have to pay tax. Well, it's really hard to know that because nobody knows what they're really going to make. So it's one of those things where, as an employer, they're like, well, what are the rules and how do we do it? Nobody really knows what to do. So they do their best job to report it a certain way. But it ultimately all filters down when you do your tax return. Hopefully, there's going to be a separate reporting on a W-2 that says, hey, this is overtime. It's the same thing with tips. They're supposed to not be taxable at some level.
So what is it? I'm going to break down both those things a little bit. I hire a guy like Troy in my law firm. And one of the first things I tell Troy is, look, you work no more than 40 hours a week. End of story. Because I know that as soon as I exceed that, then, you know, there's certain requirements that kick in and whatever. And I don't know if that's true or not, but that's how I look at it. Like 40 hours a week, that's what you get. That's full time, unless they're salaried. So now what is the overtime difference now? Do I have to worry about, do employers have to worry about time and a half? How does that work?
I mean, by rule, if you're paying somebody to work and they're not management and they're not a salary and you're paying somebody hourly, once they go over 40 hours, you got to pay them overtime. Time and a half. That's just the way it is.
Now, how does the tax implications of that change the equation? Or is it two separate things?
Well, that's two separate things. Like you as an employer, again, it's crazy. We're still trying to sort out what's happened because I've not even seen a tax form that says, where is this even at and being reported? I haven't even seen that yet. But theoretically, you're overtime. Either I'm going to classify that as overtime wages and not make it taxable.
Which I like that idea.
Which is great. But what if?
Love it.
But what if there's an income limitation, what if Troy's working here and putting some overtime, but he's also over there, he's got his self-employed business, he's making $200,000, you're not going to qualify. Well, how would you, the employer, know that? So now we got this thing, well, who's reporting what where? So it's probably my guesstimate, but I don't know this yet, so again, we're still, you know, we're in the wild, wild west out here. We assume it's going to be reported somewhere on your tax form from you. When we do your tax return, we throw it all in, put all the stuff in, mix all the ingredients, and the sausage is going to come out. We're like, oh, some of this overtime is taxable. Some of it's not.
Well, I'm an employee of my law firm.
You don't get overtime.
I work 100 hours a week.
No. It exempts people like you and me. It doesn't matter. We don't get overtime.
Sucks to be you.
I need to go find a job.
Right. Mm-hmm. And again,
do you like power washing?
I'm going to go to work for Troy.
Well, and this is, again, it's an awkward thing.
Time and a half.
There's certain industries that are in job titles that you can't be hourly. You got to be a salary. But then it's like, well, why don't we make everybody hourly? And now we'll augment that. In other words, if I'm paying you $100,000 a year now as a salary, what if I pay you hourly $50,000 a year and the other $50,000 is overtime? Well, if you're not paying tax on it, well, maybe I only need to pay you $25,000 overtime because you're the same. I just get to pay you less.
Right. So there's only a certain pool of money.
Correct. And it all looks good. And if you're so lucky to be the person that it qualifies for, which is what it's intended for, someone who doesn't make a lot of money, in a lower income strata, you get to take advantage of these things. It's a wonderful thing. Somebody in that low bracket is probably not paying a lot of income tax, but as a ratio proportion to their income, that's a big number. Mm-hmm. If you're making 30 grand a year and you have 5,000 overtime and you don't have to pay $1,000 in tax, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
If you're making 300,000 a year and
that's
you don't
Christmas.
Have to pay tax, right. That makes everything. So that was the intent. But the rules and hours coming through, we're still waiting for that to come through. And the same thing with tips.
Well, look, I'm in the service industry.
Right.
I serve my clients all day, every day. And now every time a client comes in to meet me, I serve them lunch.
I'm going to give you a tip.
I serve them lunch. Wouldn't it be great? And I come in with a little white robe and the thing. And I've got the thing and I serve them lunch. And they tip me enormously, as it turns out. I get thousands of dollars of tips every day. For serving my clients lunch.
And it's free.
And I've reduced my legal fees by quite a bit, by the way.
I'm helping the people. Right. And so it's funny, where does that put you in your adjusted gross income or the add backs to say, is that going to be taxable to or from for you? And it's the same thing that the tips is a unique thing because there's another piece of the Big Beautiful that happened is that today, if you're a food service provider and you get tips as the employer, you get what's called a FICA tip credit, where you get a credit dollars back for the Social Security tax you paid on your employees' tips. It's a great refund back, and it really helps out the industry a lot. Well, in the Big Beautiful Bill, they expanded it to personal services. So you go see your haircut person, your massage therapist, and you now give them a tip.
Or your lawyer.
Not that kind. I'm sorry. I wish it would be case because I would change my whole model. I'm all tipped.
How about counselor?
Nope. It specifically says personal service. So what ends up happening now, that employer now gets, they've been paying this FICA tax and on the tips to the employee, but now the employee is going to maybe get that money free, perhaps, and you as the employer are now going to take advantage of that tip credit.
How about Uber?
They didn't say that one, no. But that would be cool.
But I, what if I decide this is all about me trying to avoid taxes? The reason I'm doing this is because I'm pointing out something obvious that people don't consider. And it's typically the people on that left end of the spectrum that think they can somehow, create a utopian world by passing laws, but they can't. And the reason they can't is because humans are like I am. As soon as I hear this, I start thinking of workarounds. I start thinking like, all right, I'm no longer just a lawyer. I'm going to provide a car service to go get my clients to court. And if that exempts me from, I'm going to come up with any way I can to game the system within the bounds of the law. And everybody says, well, that's unethical. And that's this. And I says, all right, great. A man fell from day one, right? We're all unethical and we do our best to overcome that, but you can't legislate human behavior. You just, maybe that's not the right put, but you can't change human nature, maybe is what I'm saying. So we are all going to do our best to overcome, work around, and finagle this. And the policies that we're talking about, while great on paper, they hardly ever end up the way they're intended to.
They will work quite well. And if it's said very specific and it says this counts and this doesn't, well, that's just what it is. Somebody's always going to challenge it. But as of today, if you try to go to tax court, I mean, you're looking at 7-8 years before you get there. And so if you keep doing this pattern behavior for 7-8 years, by the time you get there and you get ruled against, you're bankrupt. Mm-hmm. So like your recourse is you generally want to follow it by the rule, unless you just want to fight for principle. And then you go hire somebody like yourself, then go through the process of doing it. But it's funny. It's not that I don't think you're trying to be unethical. You're trying to bend the rule to go into your favor for your facts and circumstances, which was all of us do on our tax return. Do you have a child and you want to get a credit for that? Do you want to buy a house and get mortgage interest? You could buy a house, pay mortgage interest and not deduct it, but you choose to. So you technically are taking advantage of the tax code.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. They got mad at Trump.
Classic debate with Hillary and Trump.
Right. Because he's like, I took the deduction. If it's available, why wouldn't you take it? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter who you are. If you make $20,000 a year and you got two kids at home and you're single and the government, you file your tax return, the government gives you $5,000 in an earned income tax refund, are you going to take that? Or are you going to say, no, I just don't believe in that and using the taxes?
This is where the heavy hand of communism starts to smack down. So take Mondami in New York City. He's like, I'm going to impose rent controls. So no more rent. We're not going to raise rent. In fact, I'm going to lower it. And what happens is the people who own the properties would say, look, I can't make this work. So I'm just not going to rent my property at all because I can't raise rent. I can't charge fees when people destroy my stuff. I can't raise rent when the next person takes over to help fund the fixes or the repairs I need to make.
The bank's raising interest rate. The bank is raising. Property taxes are going up.
So I'm just going to ride this out and not rent property at all. So then there's the supply of housing is greatly diminished. And what does that do for the world or the world economics? If the supply goes down, the demand goes up and the prices go up for a lower supply. So it screws with it. Now, Mondami's approach is going to be, well, then I'm not going to let you not rent it. And then you have to have the government come knock on your door carrying take guns and take it over and steal your property. So this is how it happens. This is how it happens. And if you think that they're going to do it better, if you think the last time Mondami ran an entire rental market in a huge city, that he's got the experience and know how to do it, of course he doesn't. And he never will because he's never done it. And even those who do it struggle with it. So
remember,
this is where it all falls apart.
As much as everybody loathes capitalism, without capitalism, we would all be living the way that people lived for thousands of years in squalor.
In squalor. You're exactly right.
So it might not be the best system, but it's way better than what everybody came from. Mm-hmm. So inside that system, is there some inequities? Yes. Is there some advantage for some? Yes. Everybody's trying to figure those out. But in general, if I want my driveway power washed, you're willing to do it. We agree on a price. Nobody's interfering with that. That's shake hands. Let's do some business.
And guess what? I'm going to come along behind you and say, I'll do it cheaper.
And I say, okay, great. Now the market's dictating. Well, then I'm like, well, what are you doing different? You're still pressure washing, and you say, oh, I'm using, making up a number here, I'm using 2,500 PSI. Wait, Troy's using 3,000. You're going to get me a deeper clean. wait a minute, you might take off the paint. You're like, no, no, I'm a trained professional. I've got $1 million worth of equipment that does it better. And you're, and I'm like going, oh my gosh, well, I really got to take care of this. Well, I got to evaluate my options, and the consumer is in charge of that.
And part of that comes down to this, customer service. This is what I found time and time again mm-hmm. upstairs in my practice. When people come to me, they don't want somebody who's just a dumb terminal doing the legal work. They want somebody who's going to listen to them, talk to them, answer their questions, even though I will say it out loud, their questions don't need answering from a clinical standpoint. Right. From a human relation standpoint, they absolutely need to be answered. And it's really critical that they understand what's going on, even though I could just sort of take that run with it and never talk to them. And this is the difference between when the government runs a business and when the private side runs a business. So if the government's going to come and say, I'm going to pressure wash your thing because I've taken it over. I'm Mom Dami. I think Troy charges too much, so we're taking that over. Well, you're going to get a crappy job because there is no other alternatives. And they don't care if you've got any questions or problems. They'll be like, yeah, we'll see you next year.
For it's real simple. To have a government job, such as the IRS, the State Department of Taxation, workers' comp, it is a thankless position. Like, I don't know how anybody would want to work there, but I have empathy for that because it's a no-win situation. You're stuck in the middle. And as a tax professional, we have to deal with these folks all the time, and we understand what that looks like. And it's a no win. I got to be the middle guy. My client is really irritated if something's happening. And I'm like, this is just how it works. Trust me. I got it. I got to go in here. Can you help me out if you can get a hold of them? But it's really hard now with whatever they're going on in the government agencies. You just can't get a hold of somebody, but that doesn't mean that we don't have to do it right. Because 3 years later, they're like, hey, you didn't do that thing. You're busted. They don't have to answer my questions. Right. They're in charge of the relations. So we have to know how to navigate that. And that's how it has to work.
This is also going on, I found lately, because I move my houses. So when you move your house, you change your service. There's all sorts of stuff you have to do. And one of the things I've learned is this is going on in the private sector. I call a major cable company at my new place. Oh, all right. It takes 20 minutes to get a person. I get a person, has to go to the construction division. The construction division says, we'll be back to you in 24 or 48 hours. They don't. So I have to call them back and they say, oh, we're on the list, by the way, to call you today. I was like, yeah, I bet.
You're next.
And then they tell me something that's completely wrong. They say, yeah, we've been at your place. We need to underground trench at 500 feet to get to your house. And that's going to be $6,000. And I said, listen, and on my last call, I told you, you don't need to do that because I've already pre-prepared. I've run conduit all the way to your pole. All you have to do is take the little string in the end, pull your wire to my house and hook it up somehow, whatever that requires. All right, we'll have to get back to you again. And look, they eventually did, and we got that sorted out. In the meantime, over this month of time, had I been stuck without any options, which is usually the government solution, I would have had no internet.
Right.
In a situation where I work from home almost daily, every day I wake up and I do work. So what did I do? I called my buddy Elon Musk and I said, do you have an alternative? He does. It's called Starlink. So I go to Best Buy and I buy a Starlink thing for about $300. I go sit it in my driveway, run a wire into my house, and I've got high-speed internet. So this is what the free market competition does. I don't need the big company. I can just, and not to extent, Starlink's a big company. I get it, but I have an alternative, and the alternative did it better.
Their solution was turnkey.
It was turnkey.
To deal with it.
Now, there's still some things I have to find a better place to mount this and whatever, but generally speaking, it works great. This isn't a commercial for Starlink because I'd still rather have it hardwired into my house, but I can't get it done.
Nope.
Or it's going to cost too much. Or I get to the point where I'm like, dude, I had this conversation last week. I'm done.
And that's where you're the big business, big government. You're going to go get your driver's license renewed and you stand in line. If that's what you want to do for your private enterprises to go pay your rent, pay your utilities, go to the store and buy whatever you want. That's not a good experience. They're doing the best they can, but they're never going to be staffed enough. It's always too much stuff to do. You know what it's like in the law and the taxes.
Yeah.
What I did 30 years ago, I had to do like this many things on somebody's tax return. Now I've got to do like 500 more things.
That's right.
They're just more and more. And the average consumer is like, well, it's the same thing. It's not even close.
And the competition brings it out. And when a government takes over, there isn't competition. we're stuck with Troy, the government, as being the power washer. And you might be awesome, but the guy the government hires after you may not be.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I can do about it. If my sidewalks aren't cleaned, if my house doesn't get cleaned, or if you take paint off and you shouldn't, or you ruin my siding, I'm like, yeah, sorry. What are you going to do? We're the only show in town and we're the government. And you can't sue us. Or if you sue us, you got to go to this court of claims and nobody cares about you anyway. So it gets you nowhere.
So it's funny, in the capitalist society, the people that are the producers do everything in their power to not be involved in that web of controls. They want to just work in the free market. The people that are not producers generally want to do everything in their power to get into that system. I know I'm generalizing here, because that's going to protect them from the capitalist. That just is not true. You're not in the business.
Yeah, that's the perception, but it's all the false.
I'm not in the business of screwing people. Well, you're not in the business.
Even if I were, I would be out of business fast.
The market will dictate I'm gone.
So Troy, you promise somebody to wash their house and you don't show up for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Do they call you next year?
No.
Right. Of course not.
Never.
And even if you wanted to screw them, take their money and not go back, that would last. You could do that once.
Mm-hmm. Word gets around. That's like my biggest fear ever. It's these like little community Facebook pages. I always, the guy's like, anytime. Yeah. The minute there's an error, something going wrong, that's the number one priority, because the minute they get on Facebook, I'm screwed. Like I am.
But to that point, you are human. You have equipment. Things happen. Things happen with me. Things happen to you. And you make mistakes.
Yeah.
How you respond and react to it and fix that and rectify it is crucial. It still might, they may never call you back, but at least you did all you could and you can go to sleep at night. Sometimes it's not a good situation, but you're going to make a mistake. You're going to rip somebody's siding off. You got to make it right. And that's all you can do. And for one reason, some people are like, thank you for that. And other people, you're the scum of the earth and they're going to bash you forever. And you can't change that.
Yep. You can't be perfect, but you can be good.
You're real good.
That's right. So one more thing, and then we're going to get to what's good and bad in the world and wrap it up. I would give Troy a hat tip, because we're talking about capitalism. You said, look, it's not perfect. I look at it like this big conglomerate of atoms colliding against each other, all moving in this certain direction, although not a perfect direction. It just sort of moves around. And you sort of got to jump in and get your ass kicked a little bit in order to be part of the system. But if you don't, you're never going to go. That's the only way down the road. You just have to do it. Right. Like you said, it can be unfair. It can beat you up. It can do things to you. But the one thing that you can do to take control of that is work your backside off. And that's what this guy does. So this is where we started. You're a full-time law student. You've got a full-time job and you've got another full-time job. And then you've got a part-time job that we're not going to talk about. I know you have another part-time job on top of all of that in order to so hard work sucks, but it's almost always rewarding.
I feel like you could do more, honest to God.
Yeah.
But
I was thinking about picking up Spanish.
Why wouldn't you?
He was talking about it.
I mean, why wouldn't you just put it on when you sleep? You know, we're all in this universe where there's just years and things happening, and you're going to have a couple paths where you're going to, you have your personal and you have your business thing, and it's all intertwined. But if you're working for somebody, you are in charge of this thing, this piece, and you're supposed to do your best for that. We believe that if you work for the government, well, you can just coast. Well, no, a lot of them work hard. A lot of them, we don't need them per se. And that's what's happening now. But if you were led to believe you do what you're supposed to do, but now there's this capitalist big government, like Amazon's going to lay off 10,000 people, like whatever, like they're going to put all robots in. Well, all these people are doing what they thought was right. And when that comes in, oh my God, they weren't prepared for that change. It's not a good situation. Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing can happen if you're an entrepreneur. You get jumped in here and you got to navigate that. They could make it where you're not allowed to power wash anymore. I mean, I'm making that up, but you're out of business. Well, that's just the risk you take. So you don't know the outcome. You know that if you put in the effort, you're probably going to be okay. And if you have that passion to want to work, it might not be that job. It might be another job. It might not be this business. It might be another business.
Or whatever you take out of your failures here, you're going to take over
there.
Never
use the F word. Never is a failure. It's a setback. And you pivot.
Whatever you take as your setback here, you're going to take those lessons and you're going to take them.
Nobody goes through life with no setbacks. It's not what happens to you. It's how you respond to it. And in your case, you've set the table. You're not dependent on one thing and you've got multiple things and you've been able to navigate to do all those very well. So if something does happen, no big deal. Hold my beer. I'll go do that one again. Right. So that is when you have a real job, keep doing your skills, keep getting smarter. In case something happens, you're marketable again. It's not up to somebody else to make your life easy. Life's supposed to be hard. And if you work hard, like you said, you're going to be successful.
Eventually.
And it isn't derived by money. It's about, do you enjoy what you do? Are you good at it? Are you making an impact? And the people that make all the money, they're never happy until they start giving back and helping other people make their dream come true. So that's where we're
at. That is so true. All right. We're going to wrap it up with that. We usually do what's good and bad, but I think we've talked about enough good and bad. We're just going to kill it. This is Common Sense Ohio, commonsenseohioshow.com. We will be back next week, of course. And then the Christmas comes and New Year's comes and we're starting next year. Just brand like new. That. So if you've got tax questions, you got tax issues, or if you're in Central Ohio, even everywhere.
Anywhere, right? We don't care.
Anywhere, he doesn't care. He's working all over the country, all over the world. Give Harper Plus a call. How do they get a hold of you?
HarperCPAPlus.com.
All right. You heard it here first. Common Sense Ohio Show. Till next time.